Now know I, dear wife, thy steadfastness. And her in arms he took and gan her kiss. And she, for wonder, took of it no keep. She heard not what thing he to her said. She fared as she had start out of a sleep, till she out of her mazedness abred. "Griseld," quod he, "by God that for us died, thou art my wife, nor no other I have, nor never had, as God my soul save. This is thy daughter, which thou hast supposed to be my wife, that other faithfully shall be mine heir, as I have aye disposed. Thou bore him in thy body truly. At Bologna have I kept them privily. Take them again, for now mayst thou not say that thou hast lorn none of thy children tway. And folk that otherwise have said of me, I warn them well that I have done this deed for no malice, nor for no cruelty, but for to say in thee thy womanhood, and not to slay my children. God forbid, but for to keep them privily and still, till I thy purpose knew, and all thy will." When she this heard, a swoon down she falls for piteous joy, and after her swooning she both her young children to her calls, and in her arms, piteously weeping, embraces them, and tenderly kissing, full like a mother, with her salt tears, she bathed both their visage and their hairs. Oh, which a piteous thing it was to see her swooning, and her humble voice to hear!
"Gramercy, Lord God, thank it you," quod she, "that you have saved me my children dear. Now reck I never to be dead right here. Since I stand in your love and in your grace, no force of death, nor when my spirit pace. O tender, O dear, O young children mine, your woeful mother wends steadfastly that cruel hounds or some foul vermin had eaten you, but God of his mercy and your benign father tenderly hath do you kept." And in that same stound all suddenly she swapped down to the ground. And in her swoon so sadly holdeth she her children too, when she gan them to embrace, that with great sleight and great difficulty the children from her arm they gan erase. Oh, many a tear on many a piteous face down ran of them that stood on her beside. Uneither abouten her might they abide. Walter her gladdeth, and her sorrow slaketh. She riseth up, abased from her trance, and every wight her joy and feast maketh, till she hath caught again her countenance. Walter her doth so faithfully pleasance, that it was dainty for to see the cheer betwixt them two, now they be met i fear. These ladies, when that their time saw, have taken her and into her chamber gone, and stripped her out of her rude array, and in cloth of gold that brightly shone, with a coronet of many a rich stone upon her head, they into hall her brought, and there she was honoured as her ought. Thus hath this piteous day a blissful end, for every man and woman does his might this day in mirth and revel to dispend, till in the welkin shone the star's light. For more solemn in every man's sight this feast was, and greater of costage than was the revel of their marriage. Full many a year in high prosperity liven these two in concord and in rest, and richly his daughter married he unto a lord, one of the worthiest of all Italy,
and then in peace and rest his wife's father in his court he keeps, till that the soul out of his body creeps. His son succeeded in his heritage in rest and peace after his father's day. And fortunate was eke in marriage, all put he not his wife in great assay. This world is not so strong, it is no nay, as it has been in old times yore, and hearken what this author says therefore. This story is said, not for that wives should follow Griselda as in humility, for it were importable, though they would, but for that every wight in his degree should be constant in adversity, as was Griselda. Therefore Petrarch writeth this story, which with high style he inditeth. For since a woman was so patient unto a mortal man, well more us ought receiven all in gree that God us sent. For great skill is that he prove what he wrought, but he attempteth no man that he bought. As says St. James, if you his epistle read, he proveth folk all day, it is no dread. And suffers us, as for our exercise, with sharp scourges of adversity, full often to be beat in sundry wise, not for to know our will, for certes he, ere we were born, knew our frailty, and for our best is all his governance. Let us then live in virtuous sufferance. But one word, lordings, hearken ere I go. It were full hard to find nowadays in all a town Griselda's three or two. For if that they were put in such assays, the gold of them has now so bad a lays with brass, that though the coin be fair at eye, it will rather burst a two than ply. For which here, for the wife's love of Bath, whose life and all her sect may God maintain in high mastery, and else were it scath, I will, with lusty heart, fresh and green, say you a song to gladden you, I ween, and let us stint of earnestful matter. Hearken my song that says in this manner. Griselda is dead, and eke her patience, and both at once are buried in Itale, for which I cry in open audience, no wedded man so hardy be to assail his wife's patience, in trust to find Griselda's, for in certain he shall fail. O noble wives, full of high prudence, let no humility your tongue nail, nor let no clerk have cause or diligence to write of you a story of such marvel as of Griseldis, patient and kind, lest Chichivash you swallow in her entrail. Followeth echo that holdeth no silence, but ever answereth at the contratail. Be not bedaffed for your innocence, but sharply take on you the governail. Imprinteth well this lesson in your mind, for common profit, since it may avail. You archwives, standeth at defence, since you be strong as is a great camel, ne suffer not that men you do offence. And slender wives, feeble as in battle, be eager as a tiger yond in eind, aye clappeth as a mill, I you counsel. Nor dread them not. Do them no reverence, for though thy husband armed be in mail, the arrows of thy crabbed eloquence shall pierce his breast, and eke his aventail. In jealousy I read eke thou him bind, and thou shalt make him couch as does a quail. If thou be fair, their folk be in presence, show thou thy visage and thine apparel. If thou be foul, be free of thy dispense, to get thee friends I do thy travail. Be I of cheer, as light as leaf on lind, and let him care, and weep and ring and wail.
The opening words of The Merchant's Tale deliberately echo the end of The Clerk's Tale, to which it is clearly a sharp response. The last line of the clerk's tale goes thus. Be I of cheer as light as leaf on lind, and let him care and weep and wring and wail. And the merchant begins, Weeping and wailing, care and other sorrow, I know enough on evening and a morrow. There is a long and large difference betwixt Griselda's great patience and of my wife the passing cruelty. So the merchant's tale is a response to the clerk and to the wife of Bath, whose tales preceded his, and it contrasts with the tale of the Franklin which comes after. The merchant confesses to a miserably unhappy marriage, and the deluded husband of his tale seems to be a scathing version of himself, another foolish older man who marries a very young woman to his cost, like John the Carpenter of the Miller's Tale, only less funny. No other work of the genial Chaucer has called down such an acid rain of language from critics as this tale. Sordid, savagely obscene, angrily embittered, say some. Well, it is not as negative as these critics contend, though, to be sure, it is hard to love or laugh at any of the characters portrayed in the tale, unlike those in the Miller's enjoyable yarn. One reason that January, the old man of this tale, calls forth so much stronger distaste than old John the Carpenter of the Miller's Tale, is the difference between show and tell. We are told briefly that John has married a very young girl and keeps her cooped up at home for fear of being cuckolded. In the present tale, however, January's foolish delusions in marrying a young woman are given at considerable length. In addition, his aged lovemaking is made to look grotesque and repulsive. Moreover, his inevitable jealousy is not merely stated, but portrayed in all its grasping unpleasantness. All of this may make the reader or listener want to sympathize with May, the young wife. But Chaucer also undermines this tendency. The young squire, who is lovesick for May, needs to send just one letter, and May promptly capitulates, offers her body, and makes all the arrangements for consummation, and disposes of the written evidence. When May surreptitiously reads the love letter of her admirer Damien, she does not kiss it and replace it in her bosom next to her heart. More shrewdly, but much less romantically, she tears it up, and in the privy softly she it cast. There follows the consummation of the grand passion of the young people, a sexual coupling in a pear tree, about as uncharming as that in January's bed. And when the old husband finally realizes what is going on, fresh May has a fresh answer ready. She can write a quick letter, turn a fast trick, return a smart answer. May's partner, Damien, is perhaps a reincarnation of January as he was 40 years before, who followed aye his bodily delight on women there as was his appetite. January's garden, where the love scene of the young people takes place, is specifically related to the most famous of all romantic medieval gardens, the garden in the great French poem The Romance of the Rose, which relates the efforts of the lover to pluck the rose in spite of all obstacles. After much effort, he does get the rose. With very little effort, Damien gets the fruit of the pear tree in January's garden. There are also strong echoes of the Garden of Eden with the serpent in the tree, and echoes of the Hortus Conclusus, the enclosed garden in the biblical Song of Songs. This had been used by Bible commentators as an image for the Virgin Mary, the heavenly queen whose name May impiously invokes for help in her unmaidenly business. Her prayer is answered instead by Proserpina, the queen of hell, who gives her the gift of the forked tongue of the serpent. This complex mixing of images and allusions paints an unsentimental picture of the workings of lust, the basic human desire that subtends romantic love, and that sometimes subverts good sense and marital fidelity. Lust, that indispensable part of our human loving, is here shown without its saving consort, love, and barely covered by the tattered rags of romantic convention. Priapus, god of gardens and sex, is worshipped in the Garden of January. But then he was worshipped in the Garden of the Romance of the Rose, too. And, if some biblical commentators were right, in the Garden of Eden, where they thought that that was the original sin. January and May, like and unlike Adam and Eve, after contact with the king of the underworld, hand in hand with wandering steps and slow, through Eden took their solitary way. Here follows The Merchant's Prologue and Tale, narrated by Patrick Tull.
Care and other sorrow I know enough, on even and a morrow, quod the merchant, and so do others more that wedded be. I trow that it be so, for well I wot it fareth so with me. I have a wife, the worst that may be, for though the fiend to her decoupled were, she would him overmatch, I dare well swear. What should I you rehearse in special her high malice? She is a shrew at all. There is a long and large difference betwixt Griselda's great patience and of my wife the passing cruelty. Were I unbounden, also may I thee, I never would eft come into the snare. We wedded men live in sorrow and care. Assay whoso will, and he shall find that I say sooth by St. Thomas of Ind. As for the more part, I say not all. God shield that it should so befall. Oh, good Sir Host, I have y-wedded be these months too, and more not, pardy, and yet I trow he that all his life wifeless has been, though that men would him rive unto the heart. Nay, could ye no manner tellen so much sorrow as I now here could tellen of my wife's cursedness?
Now, quod our host, merchant, so God you bless, since you so much knowen of that art, full heartily I pray you tell us part.
Gladly, quod he. But of mine own sore for sorry heart I tell me no more.
The Merchant's Tale.
Willem, there was dwelling in Lombardy a worthy knight that born was of Pavi, in which he lived in great prosperity, and 60 years a wifeless man was he, and followed aye his bodily delight on women there, as was his appetite, as do these fools that been secular. And when that he was passed 60 year, were it for holiness or for dotage, I cannot say, but such a great courage had this knight to be a wedded man, that day and night he does all that he can to spy and where he might wedded be, praying our Lord to granten him that he might once know a filker blissful life, that is betwixt a husband and his wife, and for to live under that holy bond with which that first God man and woman bound. No other life, said he, is worth a bean, for wedlock is so easy and so clean that in this world it is a paradise. Thus said this old knight, that was so wise. And certainly, as sooth as God is king, to take a wife it is a glorious thing, and namely when a man is old and hoar, then is a wife the fruit of his treasure. Then should he take a young wife and a fair, on which he might engender him an heir, and lead his life in joy and in solace, whereas these bachelors sing, alas, when that they find any adversity in love, which is but childish vanity. And truly it sits well to be so, that bachelors have often pain and woe. On brittle ground they build, and brittleness they find, when they wean sickness. They live but as a bird, or as a beast in liberty, and under no arrest, whereas a wedded man in his estate liveth a life blissful and ordinate, under this yoke of marriage rebound. Well may his heart in joy and bliss abound. For who can be so buxom as a wife? Who is so true, and eke so attentive, to keep him sick and whole as is his make? For weal or woe, she will him not forsake. She is not weary him to love and serve, though that he lie bedridden till he starve. And yet some clerks say it is not so, of which he, Theophrast, is one of those. What force, though, Theophrastus list to lie? Take no wife, quod he, for husbandry, as for to spare in household thy dispense. A true servant does more diligence thy goods to keep than thine own wife, for she will claim half part all her life. And if that thou be sick, so God me save, thy very friends or a true knave will keep thee better than she that waiteth, after thy goods, and has done many a day. And if thou take a wife unto thine hold, full likely mayest thou be a cuckold. This sentence, and 100 things worse, writeth this man. There God his bones curse. But take no keep of all such vanity. Defy Theophrast and hearken me. A wife is God's gift, verily. All other manner gifts, hardily as lands, rents, pasture, or commune, or mobles, all been gifts of fortune that passen as a shadow upon a wall. But dread not, if plainly speak I shall, a wife will last, and in thine house endure, well longer than thee list, peradventure. Marriage is a full great sacrament. He which that has no wife, I hold him shent. He liveth helpless and all desolate. I speak of folk in secular estate. And hearken why I say not this for naught, that woman is for man's help ywrought. The high God, when he had Adam maked, and saw him all alone, belly naked, God, of his great goodness, said then, let us now make a help unto this man like to himself. And then he made him Eve. Here may you see, and hereby may you prove, that wife is man's help and his comfort, his paradise to rest and his despot. So buxom and so virtuous is she, they must needs live in unity. One flesh they been, and one flesh, as I guess, has but one heart in weal and in distress. A wife. Ah, Saint Mary Ben City, How might a man have any adversity that has a wife? Certes, I cannot say. The bliss which that is betwixt them tway, there may no tongue tell or heart think. If he be poor, she helpeth him to swink. She keeps his goods and wasteth never a deal. All that a husband lusts her liketh well. She says not once nay when he says yea. Do this, says he. All ready, sir, says she. Wedlock precious, thou art so merry, and eke so virtuous, and so commended and approved eke, that every man that holds him worth a leek upon his bare knees ought all his life thanken his God that him has sent a wife, or else pray to God him for to send a wife to last unto his life's end. For then his life is set in sickness. He may not be deceived, as I guess, so that he work after his wife's red. Then may he boldly keepen up his head. They be so true, and therewithal so wise, for which, if thou wilt worken as the wise, do always so, as women will thee read. Lo, how the Jacob, as these clerks read, by good counsel of his mother Rebek, bound the kid's skin about his neck, for which his father's benison he won. Lo, Judith, as the story eke tell can, by good counsel she God's people kept, and slew him Holofernes while he slept. Lo, Abigail, by good counsel, how she saved her husband Nabal when that he should have been slain. And look, Esther also, by good counsel, delivered out of woe the people of God, and made him Mardoki of Ashur enhanced for to be. There is nothing in Greece superlative, as says Seneca, above a humble wife. Suffer thy wife's tongue, as Cato bit. She shall command, and thou shalt suffer it, and yet she will obey of courtesy. A wife is keeper of thine husbandry. Well may the sick man bewail and weep, whereas there is no wife the house to keep. I warn thee, if wisely thou wilt work, love well thy wife, as Christ loved his church. If thou lovest thyself, thou lovest thy wife. No man hates his flesh, but in his life he fosters it. And therefore bid I thee cherish thy wife, or thou shalt never thee. Husband and wife, whatso men jape or play of worldly folk, holden the sicker way. They be so knit, there may no harm betide, and namely upon the wife's side. For which this January, of whom I told, considered has in with his days old the lusty life, the virtuous quiet, that is in marriage honey sweet, and for his friends on a day he sent to tellen them the effect of his intent. With face sad this tale he has them told. He said, "Friends, I am hoar and old, and almost, God wot, on my pit's brink. Upon my soul somewhat must I think. I have my body foully dispended. Blessed be God that it shall be amended. For I will be certain a wedded man, and that anon in all the haste I can, unto some maiden fair and tender of age. I pray you, shapeth for my marriage, all suddenly, for I will not abide, and I will fond to spine on my side to whom I may be wedded hastily. But Forasmuch as you been more than I, you shall rather such a thing espy than I, and where me best were to ally. But one thing warn I you, my friends dear. I will no old wife have in no manner. She shall not pass 20 years certain. Old fish and young flesh would I have full fain. Betty's, quod he, a pike than a pickerel, and better than old beef is tender veal. I will no woman 30 years of age. It is but bean straw and great forage, and eke these old widows, God it what, they can so muchel craft on Wade's boat. So muchel broken harm when that them less, that with them should I never live in rest. For sundry schools making subtle clerks, woman of many schools half a clerk is. But certainly a young thing men may guy, right as men may warm wax with hands ply. Wherefore I say you plainly in a clause, I will no old wife have right for this cause. For if so were I had such mischance, that I in her ne could have no pleasance, then should I lead my life in a vowtry, and go straight to the devil when I die. No children should I none upon her getten, yet were me lever hounds had me eaten, than that my heritage should fall in strange hands. And this I tell you all, I don't not, I wot the cause why men should wed, and furthermore what I there speaketh many a man of marriage that wot no more of it than wot my page. If he may not live chaste his life, take him a wife with great devotion, because of lawful procreation of children to the honour of God above, and not only for paramour or love. And, for they should lechery eschew, and yield their debt when that it is due, or for that each of them should help another in mischief, as a sister shall the brother, and live in chastity full holily. But, sirs, by your leave, that am not I. For God be thanked, I dare make a vaunt. I feel my limbs stark and sufficient to do all that a man belongeth to. I wot myself best what I may do. Though I be whore, I fair as does a tree that blossoms ere the fruity waxen be, and blossomy tree is neither dry nor dead. I feel me nowhere whore but on my head. My heart and all my limbs be as green as laurel through the year is for to seen. And since that you have heard all my intent, I pray you to my counsel you'll assent. Divers men diversely him told of marriage, many examples old. Some blamed it, some praised it certain, but at the last shortly for to sayn, as all day falleth altercation betwixt friends in disputation, there fell a strife betwixt his brethren two, of which that one was Cleped Placebo, Justinus soothly called was that other. Placebo said, "Oh, January, brother! Full little need had you, my lord so dear, counsel to ask of any that is here, but that you be so full of sapience that you ne liketh for your high prudence to waven from the word of Solomon. This word said he unto us every one, work all thing by counsel, thus said he, and then shalt thou not repenten thee. But though that Solomon spoke such a word, my own dear brother and my lord, so wisly God my soul bring at rest, I hold your own counsel is the best. For, brother mine, of me take this motive. I have now been a court man all my life, and, God it wot, though I unworthy be, I have stunden in full great degree about in lords in full high estate, yet had I never with none of them debate. I never them contraried truly. I wot well that my lord can more than I. What that he says, I hold it firm and stable. I say the same, or else thing semblable. A full great fool is any counsellor that serveth any lord of high honour that dare presume, or else think in it that his counsel should pass his lord's wit. Nay, lords be no fools, by my fay. You have yourself showed here to-day so high sentence, so holily and well, that I consent and confirm every deal, your words all and your opinion. By God, there is no man in all this town, nor in Italy, could better have he said. Christ holds him of this counsel well apaid, and truly, it is a high courage of any man that stapen is in age to take a young wife. By my father's kin, your heart hangeth on a jolly pin. Do now in this matter right as you lest, for finally I hold it for the best.
There was also a reeve, and a miller, a summoner, and a pardoner also, a manciple, and myself. There were no more. The miller was a stout carl for the nones. Full big he was of brawn and eke of bones, that proved well, for over all there he came. At wrestling he would have always the ram. He was short-shouldered, broad, a thick canard. There was no door that he could heave of har, or break it at a running with his head. His beard, as any sow or fox, was red, and thereto broad, as though it were a spade. Upon the copright of his nose he had a wart, and thereon stood a tuft of hairs, red as the bristles of a sow's ears. His nostrils black were and wide. A sword and buckler bore he by his side. His mouth, as great, was as a great furnace. He was a jangler and a goliardes, and that was most of sin and harlotries. Well could he steal in corn, and tolen thrice, and yet he had a thumb of gold pardee. A white coat and a blue hood wearied he. A bagpipe well could he blow and sound, and therewithal he brought us out of town. A gentle manciple was there of a temple, of which a shaters might take example, for to be wise in buying of vitail. For whether that he paid or took by tale, all gate he waited so in his ashate, that he was aye before and in good state. Now is not that of God a full great grace, that such a lewd man's wit shall pass the wisdom of a heap of learned men? Of masters had he more than thrice 10 that were of law expert and curious, of which there are a dozen in that house, worthy to be stewards of rent and land, of any lord that is in England. To make him live by his proper good, in honour debtless, but if he were wood. Or live as scarcely as him list desire, and able for to help an all a shire in any case that might fall or hap. And yet this manciple set there all a cap.
Justinus, that I still sat and heard, right in this wise he, Placebo, answered. Now, brother mine, be patient, I you pray, since you have said, and hearken what I say. Seneca, among other words wise, says that a man ought him right well advise to whom he gives his land or his chattel, and since I ought advise me right well to whom I give my goods away from me, well much more I ought advise me to whom I give my body for always. I warn you well, it is no child's play to take a wife without advisement. Men must inquire, this is mine assent, whether she be wise, or sober, or drunkiloo, or proud, or else otherwise a shrew, a chidester, or waster of thy good, or rich, or poor, or else mannish wood. Albeit, so that no man finding shall none in this world that trotteth whole in all, nor man nor beast such as men could devise, but, natheless, it ought enough suffice with any wife, if so were that she had more good thews than her vices bad. And all this asketh leisure for to inquire. For God it wot, I have wept many a tear full privily since that I had a wife. Please whoso will a wedded man's life, certain I find in it but cost and care. And observances of all blisses bear, and yet, God wot, my neighbours all about, and namely of women many a rout, say that I have the most steadfast wife, and eke the meekest one that beareth life, but I wot best where ringeth me my shoe. You may, for me, write as you liketh do. Adviseth you, you be a man of age, how that you enter into marriage, and namely with a young wife and a fair, by him that made water, earth, and air, the youngest man that is in all this rout is busy enough to bringing it about to have his wife alone. Trusteth me, you shall not please in her fully years three. This is to say, to do her full pleasance. A wife asks full many an observance. I pray you that you be not ill-paid. Well, quod this January, and hast thou said? Straw for thy Seneca and for thy proverbs. I count not a pannier full of herbs of school terms. Wiser men than thou, as thou hast heard, are centred in right now to my purpose. Placebo, what say ye? I say it is a cursed man, said he, that letteth matrimony sickly. And with that word, they risen suddenly and been assented fully, that he should be wedded when him list and where he would.
This ends Disc 8. The Canterbury Tales, Disc 9.
High fantasy and curious business from day to day gan in the soul impress of January about his marriage. Many fair shapes and many a fair visage there passeth through his heart night by night, as whoso took a mirror polished bright and set it in a common marketplace, then should he see full many a figure pace by his mirror. And in the same wise gan January in with his thought devise of maidens which that dwelt in him beside. He wist not where that he might abide, for if that one has beauty in her face, another stands so in the people's grace for her sadness and her benignity. That of the people greatest voice had she, and some were rich and had a bad name. But nevertheless, between earnest and game, he at the last appointed him on one, and let all others from his heart gone, and chose her of his own authority, for love is blind all day and may not see. And when that he was in his bed, he brought He portrayed in his heart and in his thought her fresh beauty and her age tender, her middle small, her arms long and slender, her wise governance, her gentleness, her womanly bearing and her sadness. And when that he on her was condescended, him thought his choice might not be amended. For when that he himself concluded had, him thought each other man's wit so bad that impossible it were to reply against his choice. This was his fantasy. His friends sent he to, at his instance, and prayed them to do him that pleasance that hastily they would unto him come. He would abridge their labour all and some. Needeth no more for them to go nor ride, he was appointed where he would abide. Placebo came, and eke his friends soon, and all the first he bade them all a boon, that none of them no arguments make against the purpose which that he has take, which purpose was pleasant to God, said he, and very ground of his prosperity. He said, there was a maiden in the town, which that of beauty had great renown. All were it so she were of small degree, sufficeth him her youth and her beauty. Which maid, he said, he would have to his wife, to lead in ease and holiness his life, and thanked God that he might have her all, that no wight his bliss parten shall. And prayed them to labour in this need, and shapen that he fail not to speed, for then, he said, his spirit was at ease. Then is, quod he, nothing may me displease, save one thing pricketh in my conscience, the which I will rehearse in your presence. I have, quod he, heard said full year ago, there may no man have perfect blisses too, that is to say, on earth and eke in heaven. For though he keep him from the sin seven and eke from every branch of the coquetry, yet is there so perfect felicity and so great ease and lust in marriage, that ever I am aghast now in mine age, that I shall lead now so merry a life, so delicate, withouten woe and strife, that I shall have my heaven on earth here. For since that very heaven is bought so dear with tribulation and with great penance, how should I then that live in such pleasance as all wedded men do with their wives come to the bliss where Christ eternal alive is? This is my dread. And you, my brethren tway, assoileth me this question, I you pray. Justinus, which that hated his folly, answered anon right in his japery. And for he would his long tale abridge, he would no authority allege, but said, Sir, so there be no obstacle other than this, God of his high miracle and of his mercy may so for you work, that ere you have your rites of holy church, you may repent of wedded man's life, in which you say there is no woe nor strife. And else, God forbid, but if he sent a wedded man him grace to repent well often rather than a single man. And therefore, sir, the best rede that I can, despair you not, but have in your memory peraunter she may be your purgatory. She may be God's means and God's whip. Then shall your soul up to heaven skip swifter than does an arrow out of a bow. I hope to God hereafter shall you know that there is not so great felicity in marriage, ne never more shall be that shall you let of your salvation, so that you use, as skill is and reason, the lusts of your wife temporally, and that you please her not too amorously, and that you keep you eke from other sin. My tale is done, for my wit is thin. Be not aghast hereof, my brother dear, but let us waden out of this matter. The wife of Bath, if you have understand, of marriage which we have on hand declared has full well in little space. Fareth now well. God have you in his grace. And with that word, this Justin and his brother have take their leave, and each of them of other. And when they saw that it must needs be, they wroughten so by sly and wise treaty, that she, this maiden, which that Maius hight, as hastily as ever that she might, shall wedded be unto this January. I trow it were too long you to tally if I you told of every script and bond by which that she was fiefed in his land, or for to hearken of her rich array. But finally, it common is that day that to the church both be they went for to receive the holy sacrament. Forth comes the priest with stole about his neck and bade her be like Sarah and Rebecca, in wisdom and in truth of marriage, and said his orisons as his usage, and croucheth them, and bad God should them bless, and made all sicker enough with holiness. Thus been they wedded with solemnity. And at the feast sitteth he and she with other worthy folk, upon the dais, all full of joy and bliss, is the palace, and full of instruments and of vitail, the most daintiest of all itail. Before them stood instruments of such sound that Orpheus, nay, of Themis Amphion, made never such a melody. At every course then came loud minstrelsy that never trumpet Joab for to hear, ni he Theodemus yet half so clear at Thebes when the city was in doubt. Bacchus the wine them shrinketh all about, and Venus laugheth upon every wight, for January was become her night, and would both assayen his courage in liberty and eke in marriage. And with her firebrand in her hand about, danceth before the bride and all the rout. And certainly, I dare right well say this, Hymenius, that god of wedding is, saw never his life so merry a wedded man. Hold thou thy peace, thou poet Marcion, that writest us that ilka wedding merry of her philology and him Mercury, and of the song that the muses sung. Too small is both thy pen and eke thy tongue for to describen of this marriage when tender youth has wedded stooping age. There is such mirth that it may not be written. Assayeth it yourself. Then may you witten if that I lie or no in this matter. Maius, that sits with so benign a cheer her to behold, it seemed fairy. Queen Esther looked never with such an eye on Ashuer so meek a look as she. I may you not devise all her beauty, but thus much of her beauty tell I may, that she was like the bright morrow of May, fulfilled of all beauty and pleasance. This January is ravished in a trance at every time he looked on her face. But in his heart he gan her to menace that he that night in arms would her strain harder than ever Paris did Elaine. But natheless, yet had he great pity that thilke night offenden her must he, and thought, alas, O tender creature! Now would God you might well endure all my courage, it is so sharp and keen. I am aghast you shall it not sustain. But God forbid that I did all my might. Now would God that it were waxen night, and that the night would last an evermore. I would that all this people were ago. And finally, he does all his labour, as he best might, saving his honour, to haste them from the meat in subtle wise. The time came that reason was to rise, and after that men dance and drink and fast, and spices all about the house they cast, and full of joy and bliss is every man. All but a squire, that hight Damien, which carved before the night full many a day. He was so ravished on his Lady May that for the very pain he was nigh wood. Almost he swelt and swooned there he stood, so sore has Venus hurt him with her brand, as that she bore it dancing in her hand. And to his bed he went him hastily. No more of him at this time speak I, but there I let him weep enough and plain till fresh May will rue upon his pain. Oh, perilous fire that in the bedstraw breedeth! Oh, familiar foe that his service biddeth! Oh, servant traitor! False, homely hue, like to the adder in bosom! Sly, untrue! God shield us all from your acquaintance! Oh, January, drunken in pleasance, in marriage, see how thy Damien, thine own squire, and thy born man, intendeth for to do thee villainy. God grant thee thy homely foe to spy, for in this world is no worse pestilence than homely foe all day in thy presence. Performed has the sun his arc, Diurne, no longer may the body of him sojourn on the horizon as in that latitude. Night, with his mantle, that is dark and rude, gan overspread the hemisphere about. For which departed is this lusty rout from January with thanks on every side. Home to their houses lustily they ride, whereas they do their things as them lest, and when they saw their time go to rest. Soon after that, this hasty January will go to bed. He will no longer tarry. He drinketh hypocras, claret, and vernage, of spices hot t'increase in his courage, and many a lechery had he full fine, such as the cursed monk Don Constantine has written in his book De Coitu. To eat them all he was no thing eschew. And to his privy friends thus said he, "For God's love, as soon as it may be, let voiden all this house in courteous wise." And they have done right as he will devise. Men drinken, and the traverse draw anon. The bride was brought a bed as still as stone. And when the bed was with the priest he blessed, out of the chamber has every wight him dressed. And January has fast in arms take his fresh May, his paradise, his make. He lulleth her, he kisseth her full oft, with thick bristles of his beard unsoft, like to the skin of houndfish, sharp as briar, for he was shaved all new in his manner. He rubbeth her about her tender face, and said thus, "Alas, I must trespass to you, my spouse, and you greatly offend, ere time come that I will down descend. But natheless consider this," quod he, "there is no workman, whatsoe'er he be, that may both work well and hastily. This will be done at leisure perfectly. It is no force how long that we play. In true wedlock coupled be we tway, and blessed be the yoke that we be in. For in our acts we may do no sin. A man may do no sin with his wife, nor hurt himselfen with his own knife, for we have leave to play us by the law. Thus labours he till that the day gan dawn. And then he takes a sop in fine clary, and upright in his bed then sitteth he, and after that he sang full loud and clear, and kissed his wife, and made wanton cheer. He was all coltish, full of ragery, and full of jargon as a flecked pie. The slack skin about his neck shaketh while that he sang, so chanteth he in